You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Two Civil War reenactors walk into a bar. No, that's not the beginning of a joke, but the opening scene in Jessica Dickey's new play, Row After Row. The two, former high school buddies and rabid longtime reenactors, find their usual post Pickett's charge table already occupied by a novice reenactor who also happens to be a woman. What follows is a series of skirmishes about authenticity, daring, valor, the wages of war, the price of peace, and the question as to whether or not anything is certain off the battlefield. The play is currently at the Women's Project at City Center until February 16th, and I'm very pleased that it brings Jessica Dickey and actors Rosie Benton and PJ Susko to our show today. Hello.
Hi.
Hey, thanks for having us.
Jessica, is this just the logical progression from your play, The Amish Project? Are you working on a series of plays about unusual groups in Pennsylvania?
No, I don't know if that's true. You know, maybe I should. But, you know, I certainly do attach very strongly to where I'm from, which is right around Gettysburg. And it is true that a certain aspect of Americana also sort of draws my interest.
Where does the title come from?
I think it's something that came out of something that a character said, row after row. But certainly the more that you spend time in Civil War country and in the themes of the Civil War, the costs and the expansiveness of it keeps opening up in front of you, and it kind of naturally happened.
Rosie, do you think that this is about the intersection between reenactment and theater?
Oh, that's a good way to put it.
Because it's theater and theater.
Yeah. I mean, I think the difference between reenactment and theater is a really interesting gray area. And Jess has so brilliantly included parts of the play where we, you know, are acting within something that we've already experienced, even if it has nothing to do with reenactment Civil War style. So it's even, you know, more Russian dolls.
PJ, do you identify with your character's desire to become someone else for a little while?
Oh, yeah.
You are an actor.
Yeah. Well, clearly. On a regular basis. Yeah. I think he... Cal's the kind of guy that would like to live back then, or at least from what he's gathered from all the knowledge that he has. I think he prefers that lifestyle.
Well, they're engaged in something like a play, a set drama with the same ending every time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they revisit it every year.
What's it like to play characters who, in the play, are themselves in character?
Oh, that's... I think that the... Also, being my character is a stranger in the situation, so there is also a lot of layers of presenting yourself in a way that is not yourself, and then those peel off as the show goes on.
Well, for the audience, the costume thing is another layer to unpeel because there are no visible clues to class or occupation.
Yeah, no, it's you don't have a sense that everybody can be on the same line, and everybody's costume, it's talked about in the show a couple times, that you see the other uniform, but it's the same. It's just a different color. So there's no divvying up who the social structure... I mean, you have a sense of who the general is, but there's a little bit of different clothing on him.
Jessica, are people who reenact seeking to escape their lives, or looking to find a more authentic self?
Yeah, you know, I think it's some combination of both. It's definitely something I experienced when I was at the reenactment at Pickett's Charge this year, which was the 150th anniversary. So I really started to observe that people were as much interested in the battle itself and reenacting the battle as they were in camp life, you know? I mean, there was a lot of congregating, and cell phones were mostly off, and having soup together and being around the fire and in their tents. And so it was as much about being together in one space and kind of hanging out as it was about the actual tromping across the field with their gun.
But are they amateur historians in a sense? Do they take what actually happened totally seriously?
You know, there's a wide variety. There's people who are just there to sort of do something with their friends or their family. There's people who are real enthusiasts for the actual specifics of the history. And then there's people, there were first timers that I encountered. This was something on their bucket list that they'd always wanted to do. One guy, they were like on this wagon with a huge cannon. And I was passing and I asked, like, what brought you here? And they had come up from Atlanta and they'd like bought this huge cannon. And the guy said, it's my bucket list, as they like drove by, you know. There's a wide variety.
Does this appeal more to people from the South?
You know, well, I ended up reenacting in a Southern camp. So So I was sort of privy to a particular Southern lens throughout the day, and that was really provocative and challenging.
Well, they're still hoping to win that war.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I mean, you know, the issues of the war were very much on the table throughout the day, and not just because I think I was certainly asking about it and I was honest about the fact that I was a playwright, but I do think that all of those questions that we were holding back then are somehow still reverberating today, and they were looking to talk about it.
PJ, what is your character Cal looking for?
He's looking for a simplicity in his life, and also to carry on the friendship that he has going. I mean, he's sort of stripped away. He's just lost his girlfriend. I think he's sort of limited right now to his relationship with Tom, and he's trying to hold on to that, even though they're growing apart.
That Tom is the third character in the play, played by the wonderful Eric Lochtefeld. Our problem in the studio is there are only so many microphones, so we would have loved to have had him here as well. And the main conflict in the play is between your character, Cal, and Rosie's character, Leah. What about Leah? What's she looking for?
Well, I think Leah has just experienced quite a searing breaking point in her life.
Because she's aged out of her career as a dancer.
Right. And I think she also has some sort of personality, flaws that she's working through and sort of, you know, demons that she's struggling with. I think she's had some things happen in her life recently that have led her to a place of wanting to abandon her life in New York and relocate to a more simple life. And I think through a mix of curiosity and loneliness, she decides to reenact and find her way into the bar.
Were there women on the battlefield in Gettysburg?
Absolutely. Oh, I'm sorry. I couldn't say specifically in Gettysburg. I'm sure there were. There's history.
But we get the word hooker from Civil War, but they weren't fighting.
Well, we have lots
that
of.
We know
depends
of
on
anyway.
Who you talk to.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, well, lots of women did, put on Civil War, put on the men's clothes and go out and fight, but I couldn't say Gettysburg specifically.
Well, your character, Cal, says a few things that would be considered
offensive.
Neanderthal, if not misogynist.
Yeah, sure, he does.
And he doesn't like the fact that there were women there?
Well, because from his viewpoint of... listen, I get
PJ into defending Cal.
Yeah, I do. I love Cal. From his viewpoint, from his understanding, the women weren't there. They weren't fighting. They weren't, there might have been, maybe you could make an argument for the two or three that were in disguise, but the 7,000 of people that died that day were mostly men, and to say otherwise is an
purist
argument. That you will lose.
Okay, Jessica, you said that you grew up in the general area. How close is Gettysburg to the Mason-Dixon line?
Oh, I think
it's southern Pennsylvania.
Yes, that's correct. South central Pennsylvania. I want to say it's maybe around 20 miles as the crow flies.
Oh, so pretty close.
It's very close. And my town, Waynesboro, is about 3 miles, 3 or 4 miles from the Mason-Dixon line. So I grew up crossing it quite a bit and was always very aware when I did.
So that dividing line still exists. I mean, you cross the Mason-Dixon line and you find yourself in the South to some degree.
You know, it's interesting because where I grew up, we're in the mysterious gray region because, we're right there on the line. And so I remember being in my hometown and, occasionally on someone's bumper sticker, you'd see a Confederate flag. And I always found that really upsetting and frightening because, of course, I had about 5 words I associated with that flag and they were all negative. And that was something that was very interesting about the reenactment that day, was having to sit with the Confederate flag all day and feel my understanding of it, or what I'm willing to let it mean, complicate as I went throughout the day of the reenactment.
I'm talking with Jessica Dickey, whose play Row After Row is currently at the Women's Project at City Center. It's you don't have much of an opportunity to see it. It runs only until February 16th.
Correct. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then also with us are actors Rosie Benton and PJ Sasko. I have to ask you about farbing. What is farbing? And do we know where that word comes from?
No.
Well, I could go into a litany.
Leah, please. My character, is a classic farb. So, and when we went to Gettysburg, we can talk about that, but that was one of the first words that we were presented with when we went into some of the stores there. It's a very interesting phrase that's just about how you are not historically accurate with it, with how you're dressed or how you're...
And like showing up with a nose ring.
Which Leah does.
Yeah. Would be
And then these guys can recognize things like thread count.
Oh, yeah.
The guy showed us in Gettysburg.
Yeah.
He said what real, you know, Farbs wear and what actual reenactors who are historically conscious wear. And it's you couldn't even tell the difference by looking at
We went into a store and literally saw... There's Tom and there's Cal. There were two guys who were complete embodiments
really
of this character.
Surreal.
There was a shy, timid, and then there was a barrel, you know, he was
alpha.
Just, yeah, an alpha. It was great to watch them because it was so true to form.
But it means for the reenactors, they have to buy an awful lot of stuff.
And it's
hope
expensive.
That they get it all right.
It's actually a point of great pride when you talk to reenactors, how much money they spend to be able to do what they do. And that there's also a misunderstanding that reenactors get paid, and it's actually quite the opposite. They invest a great deal of money in being able to participate authentically.
Cal is very proud of his rifle.
Very. Yeah. And exactly, it was the same thing in the store. This guy presented me with this rifle that was heavier and different. He was showing me the caliber. It was just...
And $2,000.
Yeah, yeah, and $2,000. And the pride that he had in it was just such a delight to see.
Well, this may sound a bit sacrilegious, but is there something of Disney World at Gettysburg? I mean, we have this real town that relies on tourism for its economic survival. And yet it's a shrine to the dead, the site of one of the greatest speeches ever made in American history. How do you balance those concerns?
Oh, I wouldn't say it's Disney World.
Yeah, one thing I really loved about going to Gettysburg and being there is that there's not a real sense of roped off. You can sometimes go to these places where you can look at someone's old, you know, a president's house and it's all roped off to look how it looked. And you can just sort of wander the fields there. And doing research, you know, emotional research for the play, that was such a great feeling to just be allowed to sort of run right where Pickett's Charge was.
Yeah, the entire march that they took, we could sort of walk on.
And there is a difference here than from some other reenactments because it is something that really happened, as opposed to some of the reenactments you'd have at Williamsburg, Virginia, and other places.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a sense of truth.
Yeah, I think Gettysburg definitely still vibrates with what happens, and I'm sure there's an exchange rate on being able to preserve what a place meant and have the place it holds in our culture, and yet, you know, it's still a living town where people go on in their contemporary lives.
Yeah, and I'm sure, I also, we went to this observatory deck, and you look around, and it's just one of the most beautiful vistas you could have ever seen, and I bet if it was not in a place like that, we might have a different, I mean, that, I think that might be part of it. It's just gorgeous.
Later on in the play, PJ, your character Cal is upset that his buddy Tom has brought a form into the battle with him.
Yeah.
What exactly does that do?
Well, they a document written on a laser printer would not have existed back then. So it's a complete embarrassment that his friend has brought this. It's
because the whole idea is to leave your
to leave the, this
your modern
world behind.
Life behind.
No phones, no, and to ignore that stuff. And the fact that he's brought that with him, not only is it bringing some trouble that he has going on in his life that will intersect into this evening, but it's, you know, an affront to the past.
Jessica, the set is wonderful. Is it based on a particular bar in Gettysburg?
We went there.
Or do they all kind of look like that?
It is. You know, it's by Clint Ramos, and it's quite beautiful and evocative and a lot of fun to play on.
And so true.
And it is. It's based on the Dobbin House in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, where we all ate as a cast and crew. And it's a really authentic, interesting place, and it makes for a wonderful theater set for us.
There's also, you have explosions going on, guns and cannons.
And occasional dogs barking.
Now, how do people know when they are the ones who are hit since?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. That was one of my first questions.
It
was like, how do I know when to die? You know, when I was doing the reenactment, that was a prime concern to me. And, you know, my hosts at the time were like, we'll tell you, you know. So and they really, I think, wanted to get me a good seat. I mean, there's so much about it that truly was dear to my heart in terms of being a theater artist, you know. I could really appreciate the quirky pride in what they were doing and what they've sacrificed for it. And so anyway, yes, when it was time and they got me near the Union line, they yelled, now. And I would not want to watch my death on camera. I'm sure I just promptly laid down.
I mean, I just assumed impressive. That it was the newcomers who got killed off first.
No, yeah, you know, it's really up to you, though. It's sort of a self-determined journey.
Is it like people like Shirley MacLaine who claim to recognize their past lives? They have been Cleopatra's maidservant or whatever, or a slave who built the pyramids. Do you get the sense some of these people feel that they actually were Confederate or Union soldiers in the past?
If they don't directly, they're certainly seeking that, because I know one of the reenactors I spoke to for a great deal throughout the day, really one of the first things he said was, I'm trying to honor my ancestors, and that he had kind of really shaped a lot of his life around the choices of his ancestors, what they carpentry and farming, and a lot of his, he sort of eschews computers entirely. I mean, and this is a young guy. So, you know, there's a lot of, there's a longing for the past, and whether they believe it spiritually they were there is to be debated.
This is for you, CJ and Rosie. Jessica is also an actor. What's it like to have a playwright who's also an accomplished actor? Is that a mixed blessing?
No, it's great because there is.
Did
an
she
inherent...
give you line reads?
Yes,
every day with a whip.
Oh, come on, come on now.
No. But there's an inherent understanding of rhythm, of pace, of, you know, beauty in language, but also not pushing that too far.
There's also an understanding. You know, I could catch her eye in rehearsal, and when something's tough, you understand that she has been through that, and it all, I think it gave her. I mean. There was a lot of she seemed very relaxed in rehearsal. I don't know if you actually were, but I think that's because, you know, she understood the process from that side and didn't stress about
it. Well, you starred in your other play, The Amish Project. Did you ever consider playing Leah?
I really like, I mean, I'm interested in big public conversations about intimate topics, and I think I'm interested in it from both sides of the table.
Well, this play, other than being written and directed by women, doesn't particularly seem to address women's issues. It doesn't even pass the Bechdel test for sexism, which says in order not to be sexist, two named female characters have to have a conversation about something other than men. And it ends satisfyingly with a date between two semi-warring parties. Mm-hmm. So has the Women's Project changed in its goals over the years?
Oh, no. I think the Women's Project is perfectly on mission. They've been striving to provide opportunities for female playwrights and directors, and they've been absolutely incredible in nurturing this piece to its fullest expression. And Daniela Topol is our brilliant director, and Julie Crosby and the entire team at Women's Project has just been unbelievably supportive and fun and brilliant.
And it's only, the run is only until the middle of this month. Mm-hmm. And then what happens? Is the play shelved, or can you bring it somewhere else?
It's going everywhere.
It's going to have a life. It's one of those plays.
Yeah.
Well, once you've started playing a character, there's a certain life cycle of living with that character, isn't it? Many actors tell me that they understand more and more every performance. And the later performances where they finally get it.
I know, it's really sad.
I'm always afraid to go to an early
preview. We were just
preview.
Talking about this outside, that we're really finding our feet in this, and the last, 10 days have been an escalation. Mm-hmm. It's been really great.
Yeah, this week is going to be exciting.
Well, thank you so much for being on our show. Jessica Dickey, who wrote Row After Row, Rosie Benton, and P.J. Sosko, who, along with Eric Lochtefeld, make up the cast of the play, which is produced by the Women's Project Theater, under the direction of Julie Crosby and Lisa Fain, and is at the New York City Center Stage 2. Yeah. It's been a pleasure having you on our show.
Thank you
so much.